This is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It is a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Nice job pulling together all the Pat O'Day stuff for our little tribute, Nicole. Appreciate it. Well done.
Oh, thanks. He's always been so sweet to us. He would call and leave me messages trying to get you to run for governor. He's such a sweet guy.
Yeah, he had a lot of business people lined up if I would have run that would have funded a campaign. That was so flattering to me that
he was so sweet about it.
Yeah, he was so connected in the business community, and he had some real legit business people lined up if I had wanted to run, and I just always that meant so very much to me. But yeah, he was a sweet man, and I admire people who beat addiction. And then he went on to live for 40 years after he kicked the alcohol. But the cigarettes eventually, you know, you smoke forever. And then he finally quit, but way too late. But 86 years is a good long life, and it was a life of adventure. And what more could we ask for? He had a lot of
I'm so glad that we had him in last year. I'm glad that I got to meet him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, good man. And the funniest thing that I remember with Pat was one day he was in the building, not to see us, but just for some other reason. And I'm right in the middle of a live commercial during our show. And all of a sudden I see Nicole waving her arms at me. And she never distracts me when I'm in the middle of a live read. And she's waving her arms. And I look up at her and she's pointing to the window to the studio. I'm doing a Schick-Schadl Hospital live commercial, and then I look over and Pat O'Day's standing outside the window giving thumbs up because I'm talking about Schick-Schadl, which, as I said, he eventually became part owner of because that was what saved his life. And so that was so funny, though, because I'd always identified his voice with those commercials before I started doing them. And he, again, that was just him being a very sweet, gracious person that he wanted me to come in after him to talk about a place that has saved and transformed so many lives. So it's just, I'm very sad. I'm very wistful. But, you know, he was taught, and I was really glad you pulled that last clip. Because he talked about getting your kids to Sunday school, and I'm pretty sure that Pat really came to know the Lord in the last few years, especially, and that's always so comforting when somebody, you know, for the surviving family and hopefully, if we're right, those of us of faith, it's pretty comforting for our eternal possibilities. But yeah, good man. Very much will be missed. And also, you know what's good? I've discovered another great benefit, Nicole, of working from home today. When I get all emotional, when I get super emotional while I'm doing something, it's very embarrassing to have you and Sean see me with tears streaming down my face. When I'm working at home, I can do that and nobody can see me. It's a beautiful thing.
We're trying to find a plan for that. I think we need a live stream of you at home.
Well, one that I can cut off when I get emotional, which is like every other day these days. Okay. All right. And by the way, Dave Wyman just texted me. He wants a cornhole rematch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we had a pretty good game. I thought that was a good one.
Yeah, it was a random draw, but we had a socially distant farewell for a coworker last night. And by random draw, Nicole and I got teamed up in cornhole, and we beat Dave and another one of our colleagues. So good job
Carrie,
there, too.
Our friend Carrie, who's leaving for the East Coast.
Live free or die. baby. That's where she's going. Yeah.
But yeah, that was a good game. It was pretty close. And I think we both, well, you might have contributed, you and Dave standing on the same side. So, you know, canceling out each other's points helped a lot. But points wise, we probably contributed pretty equally.
Yeah.
That was a good game.
And yes, Dave and I are part of cancel culture. Okay, let's get to the fastest 15. And we'll start, you know, I was just talking about with Pat O'Day stuff, what it was like for me growing up in Ballard. Pulling wooden hydroplane behind my bicycle. I'd ride my bike to the Ballard Library. We didn't have bike locks. You kidding me? Just leave it outside, go into the library for a couple of hours. They had this nice little fountain area outside, a little just enclosed area with a fountain where I'd go to read for a couple hours in the day. And Ballard was just a good place. I worked at the Ballard Safeway store when I was 15. I worked at a store called Food Town when I was 11. I would just ride my bike everywhere I went. You can't do that anymore. There's just an ugliness that the drug addiction, the legalization of heroin has brought to all of King County. And there's another very sad story today. It's one that I relate to because this is me. When I was a kid growing up in Ballard, this guy's 20 years old. He works at the Ballard QFC. He was on his way to work on Saturday morning. His shift started at 7 a.m. So it's 6:40 in the morning on a Saturday. He's on his way into work. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a homeless guy just started beating. Moses Brudny is his name, the 20-year-old. This homeless guy just started putting a beat down on this 20-year-old kid for absolutely no reason. Didn't rob him. Just wanted to physically assault him. Moses had a wallet on him. Guy wasn't going for that. He just wanted to beat somebody at 6:40 in the morning. And then two Good Samaritan bystanders tried to jump in and stop the attack. And they were both brutally beaten as well. The homeless guy hit the 20-year-old kid in the face and head until the two bystanders intervened. Both, like I said, all three of the victims, horrible injuries. The 20-year-old kid has a severe concussion, a broken nose, swelling, bleeding. The bystanders suffered serious injuries. The attacker, the homeless guy, the fury of the punches he was throwing, he reportedly broke both of his wrists throwing punches at these innocent victims. His boss at the QFC set up a GoFundMe. They already hit their target of $15,000 because the kid's going to be out of work for a while. But she said he's the most reliable. He never calls in sick. He never takes a day off. If his shift starts at 7 a.m., he's there before 7 a.m. He's just a hardworking young man. And who knows to what extent his life's going to be changed now because of this crime and violence and mayhem that our politicians have unleashed on our streets and on our region. And it will get dramatically worse. As Dow Constantine closes the jails, as the Seattle City Council cuts half, if they get their goal, of the police budget. I told you yesterday, the exclusive that we brought to you yesterday, King County Public Defenders, a taxpayer-paid office, they want to eliminate all drug charges, including for drug dealers. If a gun illegally is found on a criminal during a traffic stop, they want to make that gun crime immune from prosecution. The goal is to unleash a wave of crime on this region, and it is the Democrats and socialists and Marxists in charge. Sawant and Morales Durkin and Inslee and Dow and Fergie. They want to see the destruction of the region, and then they think they will build it back in their image. And we're seeing this. And as I've told you, if you live anywhere else within the sound of my voice, do not think that this is just a Seattle issue, because Seattle's virus becomes the entire state's pandemic. Down in Longview, a woman there has called the police 20 times because of a homeless encampment where the crime is severely on the increase.
It's not even inhabitable anymore. I come home and I find them laying. They're taking a nap in my front yard. They're sleeping in their cars, so they're parking their cars all up and down the neighborhood. My bedroom window faces this one of these main roads, and they don't go to bed. There's no bedtime for them.
This is just a resident, Michelle, who has this violent, crime-riddled, drug-filled encampment right across the street from her, down in Longview. She talked to K2 News down there. And the city manager says, yeah, there are safer options for the homeless, but this is a lifestyle they're choosing.
The goal was to have three sites, and we would rotate between these three sites every 4 months. And when we opened the site, you know, we had initially established it for the period of late December through March 30th.
Do you ultimately think that this encampment is safer than the alternative?
Oh, absolutely. From what it was here, yes. I think it's a much more safer and secure environment.
Yeah, just not for the innocent citizens around these environments. So the trouble is radiating throughout Western Washington because of the craziness at Ground Zero here in Seattle. Up next in the Fastest 15, yesterday Donald Trump had a speech disaster when he called Yosemite Park Yosemite. Joe Biden had an absolute disaster today. Let me give you some context, though. Remember in early July, because it is clear, it has never been more clear than ever, that Joe Biden is severely mentally diminished. And he is not mentally capable of being president of the United States of America. And what is so disturbing about this is they are talking about who his vice presidential candidate is going to be. And that person is going to be the president, because Joe Biden is not going to be fit to carry out the office. And we have more evidence of that today. So the big question has been, have you been cognitively tested? And Donald Trump talked at length a couple of weeks ago about the cognitive test he took and some of the questions he had to answer. And he says, yeah, absolutely, I have been. And it sounded like he had, because those were actually among the cognitive tests. Joe Biden, just a month ago, he said, yeah, I get cognitively tested all the time.
Have you been tested for some degree of cognitive decline?
I've been tested and I'm constantly tested. Look.
I've been tested and I'm constantly tested. That's what Joe Biden said a month ago. So today he's doing an interview with a reporter for CBS, and he followed up on that. And Joe said, no, I have never been tested. But it just got so bizarre. This is another Biden interview disaster.
Have you taken a cognitive
test? No, I haven't taken a test. Why the hell would I take a test? Come on, man. That's like saying you, before you got in this program, you take a test where you're taking cocaine or not. What do you think, huh? Are you a junkie?
What do you say?
Okay, now, this is more than a little problematic. The guy who's interviewing him is black. So he asked Joe Biden, have you taken a cognitive test? And Joe responds to a black CBS reporter, that's like asking, if you're on cocaine, are you a junkie? Why would he go there with a black man who's just doing his job? Why would his analogy be, you're taking cocaine, are you a junkie? That's bizarre. But of course, he's the guy who said that Barack Obama was the first clean, articulate black person that's come along in American politics. So I think we know what's inside Joe Biden's heart. You know, Kamala Harris, who might be his VP pick, took him to shreds at a debate for Joe's racist history. And that's just another example of it. Have you been cognitively tested? No. You on cocaine? Are you a junkie? It's bizarre. But then it just continued to devolve for old Joe.
To President Trump, who brags about his tests and makes your mental state an issue for voters.
Well, if he can't figure out the difference between an elephant and a lion, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Did you watch that? Look, come on, man. I know you're trying to goad me, but I mean, I'm so forward looking to have an opportunity to sit with the president or stand with the president in debates. There's going to be plenty of time. And by the way, as I joke with him, you know, I shouldn't say it. I'm going to say something I probably shouldn't say. Anyway, I am very willing to let the American public judge my physical and mental fitness.
He's so forward looking to debating Trump. He meant looking forward. He couldn't say fitness. Joe is struggling. He is struggling mightily. These debates are going to be interesting. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. On a Wednesday afternoon, that's when we visit with Brock Huard. He'll drop by next, right after we check the news, here on the Dory Monson Show.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's Hump Day with Huard.
Blue in it, check. Brown, 24, Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Where the 12s hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Benny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline. Reaching up, making a catch. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
It is Wednesday afternoon, and that's time for our weekly visit with Brock Huard, 710 ESPN, My Northwest, 710sports.com. He's everywhere. You're ubiquitous. Fox Sports. If we have a college football season, you'll be on Fox Sports this fall,
Whoa. We don't need if. We don't need if. When we have a college football season, we don't need to say if we have a college football season. The schedules are out. The Big Ten came out today. I don't have any of my like September games that I've had in the past of, you know, West Texas A&M, A&I versus Alabama, right? I don't have any of those. None of those. Right. They're all conference matchups. Every one of them is going to be enormous, Dory. It's not an if, it's when these games get going here Labor Day weekend. Let's go.
Well, I just said that because this morning, the University of Connecticut, which is a D1 program, they announced that they are not going to play football this fall. And you and I were talking on the phone last night. This is a mentality, Brock, that I do not understand. I don't understand being young and healthy and so afraid of a virus that doesn't harm the young and healthy that you would actually give up a year of your athletic career.
But you do understand.
It makes no sense
to me. No, it does make sense. Yeah, you may not understand it. That may not have been the choice that you would have made, but you understand why they're following their leaders on their campuses and in their offices and in their states that they live in. You understand where that comes from because, you know, I'm sure there are some on those teams that want to go out and play, but they're going to be silenced as have many. And, you know, when teachers and leadership and people on campuses and people in position of power are telling you it is not safe and you need to shut down and you need to shutter the windows and the doors, you can see why the, you know, many of the behaviors have followed even with young, healthy people, because that has been the messaging to them over and over, week after week, month after month, even as we push into the new academic school year beginning, Dory.
But I don't understand groupthink either. Even when I was that age, I wasn't one to just go along with something because everybody told me that I had to. I actually believed in formulating independent thoughts. And it's like the world's all upside down because back in the 60s and the 70s, college campuses were bastions of rebellion and individuality and you know, rebelling against the what the man tells you. And now it's like if you don't conform, you will be shamed and you will be bullied. You'll be taunted. And apparently there are a lot of weak-minded people who would rather just sit on the sidelines than to stand up for themselves. And that's what I don't understand.
Yeah. And I think that is the challenge in many of these states, certainly where we live in, you know, and live on the West Coast, that has been the dominant thought that, you know, you're going to shut this down. And what's sad is you can't really even have much debate about it. And I'm thankful for these Wednesdays, as I've told you a bunch, that we can have some of this conversation. I'm thankful for some of the emails and response to it that I know people out there are like, man, thankfully we can at least discuss this. And even if you disagree, and even if you take in all the data and all the facts and all the science and everything you do, and you say, nope, I still don't feel safe, then that's your prerogative and that's your opinion. But at least have it debated and talked about. You know, I would love to see the governor of South Dakota debate the governor of the state of Washington. And I would love for those two to talk about their data and talk about their studies and talk about their science and talk about where they have come to their conclusions in the decisions that they are making and why one state, you know, Texas and Montana and Utah and Arizona and South Dakota are moving forward, not one state, but a half dozen or more moving forward with their schools and their sports, and the half dozen states that border them, Washington and Oregon and California and Colorado and others, have said, nope, too unsafe. Not going to look at that and not going to get it going. And the fact that we can't even have those debates in a public forum where people can then decide coming out of it is also incredibly sad.
Yeah, no, it is. It's sad. It's baffling to me. There's one other thing that could be threatening college sports. And I talked a tiny bit with Wyman about this yesterday, but you and I have been corresponding a bit. The Pac-12 football players, University of Washington has some who are part of this. They are trying to put together a de facto union. And they are telling the schools that they want millions and millions and millions of dollars in extended health care benefits and all kinds of other things that'll be very costly. And you've expressed great fear that the economics of college sport might be at a tipping point already. Because they fund football and men's basketball funds everything else that's a money loser. And now if football players are trying to extract millions of dollars, I don't know how the economics pencil out.
Yeah, there were a bunch of topics in that Pac-12 demands and such that those players got together. It started at the University of California. Sorry, not University of California, Cal Berkeley. It started and at Stanford in the Bay Area, and there was some players on those teams, and then it extended into the conference. I think they had some 300-400 players that helped voice some of that opinion. And Dory, some of it is exactly what you talked about in the 60s and 70s of independent thought that you want to see. And there was a lot of it that I thought, frankly, made some sense to get people on the same page, you know, as far as this COVID testing and restrictions and how you're going to go about it, to make sure you have some unanimous decision making that way, some real guidance and leadership from this conference that you're paying these conference leaders and commissioners millions and millions of dollars, and they need to be able to get their act together and get everybody on the same page and to have some social justice reform and to put some committees together and to have that voice heard. There was some stuff in there that was tremendous. But once you start talking about taking 50% of the revenue, it's just an impossibility. Just open up the books. This is not the NFL where there's a huge fight between labor and owners because the books are not open. This is, you know, this is pretty clear. These public institutions, it's really clear of where the dollars and cents go, and to see how thin that line is and how most of them, you know, already walk that line, and some lose money in their athletic departments and to try to fund all of their programs. We've already seen many across the country cut, and you're going to continue to see that in this state of that we find ourselves in right now, where budgets are going to be slashed, where there's not revenues coming in, where there's not going to be fans in stadiums, where there's going to be, you know, sports that are going to be lost. And that is where I think, unfortunately, these players just don't understand the economics of it. And they can say, well, don't build the buildings. Yeah, don't pay the coaches. Well, that's just not, you're not going backwards in that way. The market is what the market's been willing to pay and what people want to ultimately donate to as well with those boosters, to have the best coaches, to have the amazing facilities, to play on national TV, to get the best recruits. And, you know, once you start trying to dig into the pockets and take 50% of the revenue or have health insurance for the next 6, 7, 8 years, it just simply doesn't pencil at the majority of these institutions.
Okay. Well, I hope we get to the point real soon, like you said, by Labor Day maybe, where we can get past all of the divisive politics, social stuff, and just get back to it being a fun, the Saturday, Sunday diversion that everybody craves. That would be a good thing.
That would be a great thing. I don't know if we're going to quite get there when I stopped you at if. The if was just about playing games as far as getting everybody on the same page and everyone together. I don't know when exactly that's going to happen again, Dory. I sure hope it does. Sports is often the glue in the community. Sports is often the place that brings left and right and rich and poor and old and young and everybody together to cheer and celebrate for their own, be it university or hometown team. So hopefully we can find some of that unity once again. But I do think without fans in the stadiums, it's still going to take quite a while.
Now, if there's anything that can bring a broken country together, it's Brock Heward, who you hear every Friday or every Wednesday, whatever day this is, on The Big Show. And check out his podcast at 710sports.com. All right, Brock, enjoy it. I'll talk to you next week.
Love you, Dory. See you, buddy.
Love you. Okay. Brock Heward with us, and we have lots more straight ahead. It's the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on, rolls on, rolls on.
When I was talking with Brock Heward in the last segment, I was longing for a time when sports could just get back to being kind of a fun distraction from all of the nonsense in life that we're dealing with on a daily basis. And that's why I find it very curious how the sports leagues have really embraced the protest culture. Because NBA is back playing, their ratings, they were expecting tremendous ratings last weekend, their first weekend back, and the viewership was way, way, way down. And what you saw in the entire league, only three people stood for the anthem. I mean, Colin Kaepernick, Michael Bennett of the Seahawks, they were the aberration a couple of years ago, and most players stood. Now, if you don't stand, and I told you about that one player who stood for the anthem, and then he blew out his knee in ACL in the game that night. And a host on ESPN, Dan Le Batard, was joking about, thought it was funny that somebody who wouldn't take a knee blew out his knee. And the fact that ESPN, which is supposed to be celebrating athletes and athletics, that they think it's funny that somebody suffers what, you know, is a season-ending injury, and it can be career impacting as well. And they think it's funny just because somebody didn't cave to the peer pressure. And so the TV ratings are way down. Baseball's way down. Basketball's way down. Who knows how it's going to affect football when it comes back in the fall. Here's one story about how groupthink is being mandated. And look, I believe that it's fine to have opposing viewpoints. But the radical left does not. And if you do not think the way that they mandate, they will. You know, I talked to a 17-year-old high school girl on the show yesterday. And because she supported the police, she told me about the brutal bullying and harassment she's gotten from her Seattle high school classmates. Because she supports the police, they will bully you into submission, they hope. So there's a Georgia Republican senator named Kelly Loeffler. She does not agree with the Black Lives Matter organization. She agrees that Black Lives Matter, but she doesn't agree with the organization. She has said that it's a Marxist organization, that they have said that it's one of their goals to destroy the nuclear family, and she has spoken out against the organization. And so, Senator Loeffler is also one of the owners of a WNBA franchise, the Atlanta Dream. And the Atlanta Dream were playing the Seattle Storm a couple of nights ago. And Sue Bird, who I've always, you know, I've done so many fun things, the three-point competition against Sue and had her on the show so many times. But, I mean, she has just gone so radical. Sue Bird had this idea. Since Senator Loeffler, who owns the Atlanta Dream, since she's running for re-election, how about if all of the Storm and the Atlanta Dream players come out on the court for our game wearing a T-shirt that says, Vote Warnock, the team owner's Democrat opponent. And so they did. And Sue Bird explained why.
Sue Bird here with us tonight. And Sue, you are making a statement with your T-shirt today. I understand this was your idea. How did you work with the rest of the players in the Atlanta Dream to make this statement?
Yeah, I mean, to say it's my idea is a stretch. I think we all work together. We're a league that represents more than just basketball. And I think one of the things that we're really, or that is really important to us, is voting. And I think this is just a great way to connect those dots between social justice and getting out and voting. And for the players, it was optional, it was voluntary, but it's always great to be unified.
It was optional, it was voluntary. Bull-loney. You are all mandating groupthink, and you will go after anybody who dares dissent. And the players on the Atlanta Dream who get a paycheck from that center, they should be ashamed of themselves. And the Big Lead of Tim is coming up next.